signal, but for some reason the Zoom just wasn't letting me unmute and stop my start my video.
Strange things happen.
But y'all can see me, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Thank y'all.
While we're waiting for him, can we, do we know who is attending by phone, a 713 number ending in 381?
I assume it may be Carol, but I don't know. She's on, looks like she's muted.
So whoever is here on the phone, on the telephone with the number ending in 381, could you please unmute and identify yourself? If you're unable to unmute and identify yourself, I'm going to have to remove you from the hearing. So if you could please identify yourself, whoever's here on the telephone number ending in 381. Judge, do you want me to remove this person?
That is fine. Go ahead and do that. All right, as I said, we're on the record. Now, I need each attorney to make an appearance and tell the court who you represent. Ms. Bayless, why don't you begin?
Sure, Judge. Bobby Bayless, I'm representing Carl Brunstein.
Candace Schweiger.
Ms. Schreger.
Candace Schweiger, representing Candace Curtis.
Mr. Spillman.
Good afternoon, Judge. This is Neil Spillman. I represent Amy Brunstein as a co-trustee and in her individual capacity.
Mr. Mendel.
Your Honor, Steve Mendel representing Anita Brunstein in her fiduciary capacity as an individual.
All right. Now, did we have a party that was pro se?
Carol Brunstein is pro se.
And could that have been the person on the telephone?
I assume that is who it was, Judge, but I don't know. I don't recognize the phone number, so.
Okay.
Right now, I don't see anybody in the waiting room.
Today, you're on our ancillary docket, and if I understand it correctly, we need to talk about trial dates and length of trial. Is that your understanding, Ms. Bayless?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Mendel, your understanding?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Spillman?
Yes, that's my understanding. Although when you're ready, I think we might be able to short that for that for you.
All right. Mr. Schreger?
That's my understanding, although I do not have an understanding as to which cause number we're here for a trial date on.
Well, my docket sheet says the 401. My experience tells me, Mr. Spillman, when a lawyer tells me they have something to say that can shortcut things, usually makes it twice as long. But I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, I'll give it my best shot, Judge. I think the conversation started with Mr. Mendel and I asking 2022, potentially in April, which was one of the two-week docket dates that we had gotten from the court, that we were fine with it being set for a month. And if we don't need that time, I'm sure all of the attorneys would be happy to give it back to the court. But it didn't make a lot of sense to Eve and I to have a knockdown drag out over 2 weeks versus 4 weeks. Let's just set it for the 4 weeks and have a trial date and have the structure for that time from having the trial date.
Do you realize that we have one court reporter and we have continuing dockets on probate, guardianships, airships, other ancillary matters? To give any one case 1 month is an extraordinary gift to that, to those litigants. And in addition to my statement that when someone says a shortcut and it tends to go long, lawyers are paid by the word, and the more words, the more they get paid. And the longer the trial goes, the better it is for them. To use your phraseology, to give you a shortcut, lawyers will use up the amount of time we give them. And I want to discuss the, we're talking about the 401 case. Is that correct, Mr. Spillman?
Yes, the case involving the affirmative claims by Carl Brunstein, by Candace Curtis, and by the trustees, and then the, yeah, so those are the parties that have affirmative claims.
Okay, so let's start with Ms. Bayless. Tell me what your client's claims are in a nutshell that you wish to pursue at this trial.
No, Your Honor, and I will say this, that my estimate of the trial time is dependent on what this court does on a summary judgment that is pending, because some of the issues are taken up in that summary judgment that could be eliminated from the trial. But unless we have a ruling on that, I'm just trying to give a realistic trial time. There are issues relating to transfer. There's the issue of whether the trust amendment or the qualified designated beneficiary designation is void because it violates the terms of the original trust agreement. There are issues relating to transfers that were made from the trust after Nelva Brunstein resigned from that position, and there are issues, just general fiduciary issues, relating to those transfers and other payments. Some are transfers directly of assets of the trust. I say assets, stock transfers, as opposed to cash. And then there are any number of cash transfers as well that are subject to being litigated.
And when you're talking about the trust amendments being void, you're talking about the appointment of your client's siblings?
I'm actually talking about the qualified beneficiary, just the entire document. I have argued in the motion for partial summary judgment violates the original trust document because it is defined it as an amendment, and one of the settlors of that trust had already died when that was done.
Okay, just speaking hypothetically, and don't take anything from this, but just hypothetically, let's say that the motion for summary judgment is denied, and we're going forward in trial on your issues. How many witnesses do you anticipate calling? And I'm not holding you to it, just trying to get an estimate.
Well, I appreciate you not holding me to it, Judge, because I don't really know the answer to that. But I would say you're talking about probably several expert witnesses and maybe as many as a dozen fact witnesses.
And have y'all gotten to the point where you disclosed expert witnesses' identities, taken depositions on those witnesses?
There have been no depositions taken. There have been some expert designations, but those will have to be addressed again, Your Honor. For example, the accountant that I designated has retired. One of the other experts that I designated has retired while this case has been pending. So that will have to be addressed. But there haven't been any depositions of experts.
All right. Ms. Schreiber, what do you say to the issues that your client wished? Would you tell me just as briefly as you can, the issues that your client has in this matter?
Your Honor, we don't feel that the bill of review is something that we have to have heard first. You know, we filed that, about 2 years ago, and it was on the jurisdictional issue, and I could probably predict maybe how you rule it. Nevertheless, we've never had it set. So, the other issue is I'm not so certain. I thought our cause of action was 401, and right now we do have a pending action in the Fifth Circuit on the issue of the transfer, whether or not the transfer was valid from this court to the federal court. I mean, the other way around, sorry. So we have some things up in the air that I think have to or should be resolved before we're going to be ready to go forward.
So has the circuit, there's no stay in place, is there?
There's no stay.
So what makes you think we can't go forward?
Well, I'm not saying we can't go forward. I just felt that the bill of review at a minimum needed to be heard first.
Okay. Let's just, as I said to Ms. Bayless, and don't take anything from this, but let's just say hypothetically the bill of review is denied. What are the issues your client wishes to bring up at a trial?
Well, my client is suing the trustees for a breach of fiduciary duty and for failing to distribute the trust, and that's the primary tort claim that she's brought. There's some.
I heard breach of fiduciary duty. What else?
I believe that's the primary claim, breach of fiduciary duty. We didn't assert any type of declaratory judgment or anything like that. Ms. Bayless mentioned, the qualified beneficiary designation is something that we've challenged, and so multiple reasons. So we are also waiting on your ruling on her motion. I don't know how many witnesses we would have at this point. We haven't had a docket control order since 2015 in this case, so there's been very little that's been done in organized fashion in the case to prepare for trial. So we don't have experts designated. Not by me.
So you don't have an estimate of the amount of witnesses you would want to call?
I don't.
At this time? Okay. Mr. Mendel, tell me about yourself here. Judge, for the co-trustees, for the 401, it's really the assertion of, you know, the general denial and affirmative defenses. I wouldn't disagree. And we just see this as a breach of fiduciary duty, fraud allegation type of case. In terms of witnesses, I wouldn't disagree with Ms. Bayless. There could probably be 8 or 10 witnesses. In terms of experts, yeah, there's probably some accounting people, attorney's fees. I don't know if plaintiff intends to, plaintiff being Ms. Curtis, if she intends to designate a handwriting expert, but on the expert side, there could be probably 5 or 6 people. So 8 to 10 in terms of fact, witnesses, maybe 5 or 6 people in terms of experts.
Okay. Mr. Stillman.
Yes, Your Honor. So a couple of things. So Mr. Mandel, I think, spoke correctly about the witnesses. I think, Judge, from the co-trustees' perspective, in our affirmative claims for relief through our declaratory judgment action, I think this case really breaks down to four issues. One is that no unauthorized distributions were made by Anita Brunstein during the time period that Ms. Bayless was referring to, so after Nelva resigned but before she died. Issue number two would be that during their tenure as co-trustees, the co-trustees have not materially breached any of their duties, so that's a bit of an overlap between what Ms. Bayless identified.
That's Amy and Anita. Yes, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
A third issue that we have to pursue actually on behalf of all, as the co-trustees, that we have to pursue on behalf, theoretically, of all 5 siblings, is whether or not anybody's actions in this case have triggered the forfeiture clauses that are in the primary trust document or one of the qualified beneficiary designation documents. And then the fourth issue that seems to be coming up quite frequently, Judge, is the obligation, or who has the obligation, to pay for attorney's fees and expenses associated not just with the administration of the trust, but also fees and expenses that have come across or come about directly as a result of the litigations initiated by Mr. Brunstein, Carl Brunstein, and by Ms. Curtis. So those are sort of the 4 key points that encapsulate both our defensive posture and our affirmative posture. I will say, though, Judge, that I'd like to get a little bit more clarity from Ms. Bayless and Ms. Schrader. The issues that they identified just now are a lot more contained than what is in either of their clients' live pleadings. So, Judge, what I mean by that is Carl Brunstein has upwards of 16 causes of action, and I think about 4 or so issues under the Declaratory Judgment Act in addition to those 16 causes of action. And Ms. Curtis has about 13 causes of action, including a declaratory judgment claim, which Ms. Schrager had just said there isn't one. So if people are saying, if what they're saying to you now means that maybe the thing that they need to do is amend their petitions to eliminate some of these superfluous causes of action that they're not interested in pursuing a trial, that might make things a lot easier for everybody. And if that's not what their intention is, then I think that they've misstated their answers to your questions about what are their issues for trial.
Well, I can address that if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead and respond if you want to.
I mean, the general question was posed about what the issues are, how many witnesses there might be. I'm not suggesting I'm abandoning any causes of action because of this general discussion. I'm also not suggesting that I'm prepared for a pretrial conference in a case that's about to go to trial. So there may be some causes of action that are eliminated either by summary judgment, by settlement, by attrition. I'm not saying there wouldn't be, but I didn't view this as an analysis of pleadings. I thought this was an attempt to figure out when the trial would be set.
Ms. Bayless, what type of work do you think needs to occur before you're ready for trial?
Well, again, I would like to have a ruling on the motion for summary judgment, partial summary judgment, so that we know how those issues have to be addressed. And some discovery has been done. I'm not suggesting there's a ton of discovery that is left to be done. Some written discovery has been done. There have been a lot of discussions among the parties, but I'm not sitting here today with a view toward trying the case next month. So I will plead
some of these legal issues. And it will make a big difference in terms of whether additional discovery is needed on any of those issues.
Did it? Or else it may have been Jason Ostrom that filed it. I'm not sure. I'd have to pull it up and look that
okay.
up.
Okay.
That wasn't my focus. But also, we're still listed as 402, not 401. So I'm a little bit confused about that. We have three claims and in our live pleading. So I don't know if those cases are consolidated, if that's how it's being tried, because you listed the 401.
It did. And again, I don't have the full file with me today.
That's fine.
Judge Comstock, we are talking about 401, are we not?
So there are many subfiles in this overall case, and my understanding was that we had reduced it all back down to the 401. Are you wrong about that?
And if I may, I think the Comstock said that exactly correct, and I was able to pull up real quick. I think I'm looking at the correct thing and agree in order to consolidate cases, and that's the 401 and 402. And it was signed by Jeff Butts, if I'm assuming I'm looking at the correct document, on March the 16th of 2015. And it was approved as the form by Jason Ostrom, who was Ms. Curtis's attorney at the time, by Ms. Davis, by Ms. Smith, who was Gerald Runstein's attorney at the time, and by myself, and by Brad Featherston, who was with Mr. Mandel's office at the time. So I don't think there's any further question about whether the 402 has been consolidated.
Actually, there is. That document was found rolling around in the clerk's desk. It wasn't part of the official file for a period of time. So I have some questions about that document itself. But it wasn't my understanding that we were consolidated and our file is still listed under 402.
Well, I'll review that order, Mr. Spillman. Says what it says, and it's also signed off on by the attorneys for the parties, and we're going to live with that result. That doesn't, Ms. Schreiner talked about a 403. What do you know about a 403, Mr. Stone?
So the 403, Judge, is the case, I believe, it's against the law firm, the Bostic law firm, and I guess we don't want to talk about that too much because Corey, I apologize, I'm blanking on his last name, but counsel for the Bostic firm isn't on this call, and I don't think knew anything about it.
I agree. If that's the subject matter of it, we'll take it up at another time.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir. You were going to say something else.
Yeah, the 403 is the claim against the law firm. The 404 is the bill of review. And then there's also, I think, I don't know if it's called a 405, but there's also this foreign judgment issue that was on the court's docket to, I don't even know if you want to get into that.
If I can speak to that, Judge, there's nothing that needs to be done with that. It was effective the moment it was filed. It's the injunction authenticated in state court. That's all it is.
Well, except for the fact, Judge, that same injunction is pending in the 401, and is the subject of the Fifth Circuit appeal, because Judge Hoyt in the federal court basically said that I don't know how much you want to hear about that right now, but the same injunction that they're contending has been domesticated as a foreign judgment is neither a judgment nor says what they say it says per the judge who signed that injunction. And it was accepted, the injunction was accepted by Judge Butts into this court and the 401, and any proceeding about whether it's been complied with, violated, etc., is before you, Your Honor, not before anybody else, and it is not a final judgment.
And the motion for summary judgment that Ms. Schreiner talked about, that was filed in 2015, possibly pro se by her client, was that something that you as the attorney for your client responded to?
Judge, I have to tell you, I'm having a hard time. I'm clicking on things here at my office, finding the motion that Schrager is referring to. I'm not saying
judgment on file, or one's a response, that were never ruled upon, and we were never given a hearing. So I suppose at this point maybe it's moot. It's not like the order is outstanding because it wasn't her. But I've got six other motions. I've got a basic and free motion for summary judgment, the defendant's motion to dismiss for want of prosecution, Amy and Anita Brunstein's no evidence motion for partial summary judgment. These are all most of these are 2015. Carl Brunstein's motion for partial summary judgment, 2015, 7/8, 7/13, 2015. Response to no evidence motion with demand to produce evidence, that was Candace Curtis. 7/20, 2015 was Drina individual motion for protective order. 1/25, 2016, Candace Curtis motion for partial summary judgment.
All right, well, if they haven't been set for submission mm-hmm. or set on the docket for a hearing, I'm not going to deal with it.
Okay.
Right now, Ms. Bayless has an outstanding motion for partial summary judgment, and I've heard you say that you have a bill of review
right.
that has on jurisdictional issues that has it been set?
It's not been set, Your Honor.
So, has it been set for submission?
No, it is not. I need to do that.
I don't know where we are with that, and I apologize. I don't have that great of a memory on this matter. Have we had a hearing on that, Mrs. Schrager?
On the bill of review? No.
Okay. So if we haven't had a hearing, and it hasn't been set for any type of submission, how could I possibly rule on it?
I'm not saying that you should have ruled on it, Your Honor. It's my responsibility to set it. It was, I was
okay.
Waiting
well,
to see
then it,
going.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. So it looks like the court needs to address Ms. Bayless' motion for partial summary judgment. She seemed to indicate that a decision on that might affect the way she goes forward. Is that right, Ms. Bayless?
That's right, Your Honor. And when we were last before you, and I don't remember now when that was, it is when this was talked about, and you said you were going to deal with this motion before we did anything else. So, I think it will be important to all of the parties to know your ruling on that, whatever it may be.
Thank you. Now, Carol Brunstein, you've been very quiet, and I appreciate that. Tell me what you need to get ready for trial.
I really have no idea.
Okay.
I'm pro se. So I've been trying to figure out exactly what my role is in this trial.
All right. Do you have witnesses you intend to call? That you know of, without identifying them, do you intend to call witnesses? Do you know?
Well, I guess if it turns out that I figure out that I'm going to need witnesses, because I'm not really sure what my role is in this, there are witnesses I could certainly call.
Okay. And at the beginning of this hearing, I think maybe Mr. Stone, you talked about an April 2022 setting. Was that you that spoke about that?
Yes, Your Honor. That's before I fixed myself into telling that we had a short test, but
who did you talk to come up with April?
I believe it was, well, so the Mr. Lindell that did the most of the emailing on that, but I believe it came from the court that there was a 2-week setting in April 4th, 10/15 was one of the options that we were given. And what would that be, Steve? About 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking for it now. Let me ask Judge Comstock, did you participate in that to where we might have some time in April 2022?
I believe Anna did. I'm looking at the calendar now, and if we set it the week of beginning
into the week that would include the Easter holiday and the other holidays that we have around that time. So that may not be the best time to set it. I don't know. But that is when we start, when we begin to have swaths of time unscheduled in this court.
Have you requested a jury trial on this? Plaintiff requested a jury trial. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear whoever said something. The plaintiffs requested a jury trial on the day that we were offered for April 4th to the 13th for a 2-week preferential setting, or May 2nd to the 13th for a 2-week preferential setting. And based on the emails, everybody indicated April, but Ms. Bayless feels like we need more time. As indicated earlier, the co-trustees just want a 2022 date, and we'll take whatever you allot, Judge, whether it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. When you say the plaintiffs requested a jury trial, are you talking about Ms. Bayless? And I think I'll pull it up, but I think Ms. Curtis did as well. Is that correct, Ms. Bayless?
I don't remember, Judge. I view this as a jury trial. I don't remember who made the demand, the jury demand. It could have been me. I just don't remember.
I just pulled up that Carol Brunstein made a jury demand back on November 13th of 2014.
Okay.
Her
attorney at the time, just to be clear.
Charlie Smith was the attorney at the time.
All right. So let me ask this question. I think Ms. Bayless might have answered it, but if Ms. Carol Brunstein decided she didn't want to go forward with a jury trial, is somebody going to want to step into her shoes and have that occur?
My client would, Your Honor.
Okay. And Ms. Carol Brunstein, do you still want a jury trial?
Well, actually, I really don't want a trial at all. I was hopeful that we could try a little bit harder on this last settlement, but if I don't have a choice in the matter, I assume the jury trial is the best way to go. I really have no idea.
Okay.
I mean, this is 11 years after the fact, so.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I bring it up is the lawyers well know that if we were going to try this to the court, we would have more flexibility and could probably get to you faster and try and dispose of the case one way or the other. Jury trials are more complicated choreography, so to speak, and I just kind of want to cover that ground and make sure that jury trial is what is going to happen as compared to a bench trial. And I'm hearing, Ms. Schrager, is your client or you dead set on a jury trial?
I have to speak with my client. I believe so. I believe.
And Ms. Bayless, you believe that jury trial is probably the best way to handle this?
Well, again, I have to speak with my client as well, Your Honor. I haven't even entertained it as anything other than a jury trial for so long. I certainly recognize the issues in both directions. I don't even know how many juries for non-criminal cases are going to be pulled in the year 2022, depending on what's going on. But I can't comment on that without talking with my client about it.
I just did a COVID jury trial. It was interesting. So, but I think the damages require a jury trial.
By April, we'll have COVID-20. Mm-hmm. That we'll be dealing with, concerned with. And Mr. Mendel, what's your feeling about jury trial?
Well, without speaking to the client, I'm happy to try it either way.
Okay, and you, Mr. Stillman?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think getting it done is probably the important thing at this point for all legal resolve. Again, that's off with the clients.
Okay. And so, Anna,
time in April to set them for preferentially for a jury trial? And then
he did, Judge. The only, like Judge Comstock stated, the only thing with April is on the 15th, you do have fixed price, and of course it'll be closed. So that's one thing to keep in mind, depending on if we're going for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks. But we do have April and May at this time pretty open.
Well,
find if you believe that the 402 was consolidated into the 401. That being said, Ms. Schrager, on behalf of her client, then initiated an entirely new litigation in Harris County District Court to try to domesticate and enforce that same injunction. We filed a motion to transfer here of that matter from the district court to probate court 4 because that injunction was already here in probate court 4. I know Ms. Schrager keeps referring to the general rule that all you have to do is file that and it becomes immediately effective, but what that leaves out is that those final.
Right now, it's just amongst all of us. There's no mediator.
You know,
might be a little more complicated than you think, but if the issue was attorney's fees, then I'm sure we could have a hearing on that matter, and that would be the end of it if you resolved all the other matters. I, of course, encourage all of you to continue to talk.
Right, and we're not that far away from resolving it. We're not. And that's why I'm like, okay, this leap to trial, are we adding another $100,000, $200,000? Should somebody lose? Can they afford to pay? I don't know which side would win. I don't know if I would lose. I have no idea. With the jury, I don't know what the jury would say.
Mr. Mendel, you want to say something? The first thing the question was, is there anything else that the judge needs to consider today so that we can wrap up this hearing? What you're talking about,
okay.
That's not an issue for this court today. So if you have anything else for this court, we can adjourn.
Okay, well, I mean, now that I'm finding out that we could possibly just have a hearing to deter for the attorney fees, and maybe we could settle it amongst ourselves. I'm sorry, I'm not an attorney. I'm not going to hire one, but I don't have the money to do so.
Wait a second. Let's just lower the temperature. Y'all can talk by yourselves without involving the court. I encourage settlement talk, but settlement, by its definition, implies compromise. Y'all keep talking if you want to keep talking, but right now, today, I just wanted to find out if there was anything else that I could do today. I can't solve it for you today. I can't rule on attorneys today. So I assume from your end, Ms. Brunstein, that there's nothing else that I can do today for you. Is that correct?
That's what it sounds like, yes.
Okay. Well, then, yes, Mr. Spillman.
All right. What, if anything, can we do to help you with this question that the figure raised about the 402 and whether it really is consolidated into the 401?
Well, I'd like to see that order. I can have Judge Comstock. Do you have the date of that order?
If I still have it up, I can tell you. No. Judge, I'll send it to Judge Comstock with the rest of the things that you asked me to send to her.
Okay.
And you, Judge, when you, I assume I'll copy all the other attorney fees just so they can see what I sent into the court.
Anything you send to the court, I want you to copy all the other lawyers on.
Neil, it's March 2015, if that helps.
Yeah, I just can't find it in the number of things that I opened up on the screen during this hearing.
What is that date?
I don't have the exact date. I have March of 2015 in my notes.
What day in March?
I don't have, let's see, just one second.
That's okay. We'll look it up.
Okay. March 9th, sorry.
March 9th. All right. All right, then I wish you all well, and I want you to let me ask Judge Comstock. Do you want to work with them now on a DCO?
Anna really is in charge of our DCOs these days. Anna, do you want to, shall we stay on with them and get that knocked out?
So I've already started to draft it. We just need an ADR date, and I think I'll take care of it. We consider joint pretrial order due date as well.
All right, then I'm going to back out and let y'all stay on this Zoom with our staff attorney, okay?
Thank you. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, y'all take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
I'm calling off YouTube.
Ms. Russell, we've already had three mediations. I really don't think we need another ADR date.
Okay, Judge Comstock, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, first, the o'clock. So it looks like, I have no crystal ball to help me kind of figure out how we're going to be able to pull jury panels, but it's kind of looking to me like there may be a requirement that we give 30 days notice on our anticipated panel requirements. So I just, because this is being set so far out and it's going to be a long trial, I might suggest that we have the pretrial conference 30 days prior. Does anyone object to that?
No objection.
Objection. Anna, can you find a date that's 30 days prior or thereabouts?
Yes.
More than 30 days is probably appropriate.
Okay.
That's time to get the notice.
Okay. We can do the last week of February. We can do February 21st.
Judge Horowitz likes Word Perfect, and I like Word.
Okay, well,
Thank you.